Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had
Hello, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Brendan Cornelius, Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 75 cents. They were down last night, down this morning. Now they're unchanged. Dow futures down 12. NASDAQ futures down 4. This is after a pretty solid down day yesterday. We were down 389 on the Dow, 35 on the S&P, and 95 on the NASDAQ. So pretty solid, pretty sharp. Pretty sharp move to the downside. We were kind of stayed there all day, kind of rallied back a little on the close, Brendan, and then gave up some in the close. Obviously, Hong Kong was sort of front and center. Just general malaise, I'd almost call this, and I don't know. It seems to me that we're coming a tad unglued, and it's
is there any rhyme or reason to the way the market's been reacting lately?
Yeah, it goes under any piece of news.
But I mean anything that's predictable. I mean it just seems like it's veering from one extreme to the other.
Well, you clearly have central banks in somewhat of a race to the bottom here.
Mm-hmm.
We have people on all sides telling them what to do that, in my opinion, don't know what the hell they're talking about. And we're zeroing in on this the manna from heaven we have from the last 9 years. If we can just get the Fed to pour more money into the system, somehow nominally we'll be okay, even though realistically we're not okay. I mean, you can pour money in the system and it doesn't do any good. It just creates inflation or moves asset prices up, but we've got very odd ways we figure out how well we're doing. If the market goes up, we're doing good, even if individual people. And if you don't hear 30 people a day say how strong the economy is and how terrific everybody's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's almost like you have to genuflect to something, even though it's not true. I mean, but everybody has to say it. In my opinion, it's not true. I mean, mm-hmm. There's a difference between people working and people having health. I say health, economic health. We had, I don't know if you listened yesterday, Carl was ranting and raving regarding how it's been a tremendous, on all levels, it's been an amazing plot, maybe not on one person, I don't know if there's one person behind the curtain, but to lower wages in this country for the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, you're exporting low-end jobs to other places. On the upper end, you've got these H-1B visas where you're pouring people in from all these other countries, and they're causing supply growth in the upper level ones where people don't get paid what they should get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got almost a national war on workers' wages at every level. You know, the idea
right.
being
and
that corporate profits are more
better
important
than it is.
Yeah, but you know that if somebody who makes $10 an hour, $12 an hour, really can't live on that, and
mm-hmm.
you say as long as he's got a job, he should just suck it up. Well, why not make it $2 an hour? I mean, what's the difference? You know, well, he's got a job, he must be doing okay. Well, no, mm-hmm. he doesn't. No, he's not. I mean, so I'm not saying everybody deserves way more, and I'm not a big fan of minimum wages. I'm just saying if that's where your supply and demand puts people, there's something wrong with the supply and demand.
Uh-huh.
And I always go back to the economic piece of it. Now, why is it like that? And it shouldn't be. You know, every time there's a company that buys another company, and they lay off everybody cheers because somebody with the stock made some dough. But those people, now you've added to the labor force. There's no economic, you know, I've been out of the academia for so long, but we'll ask, you know, Professor Hal or the guys that come on that are professors, we'll ask Russell tomorrow. I don't know, I know of no rigorous study that says if a company say the size of Upjohn or Squibb or somebody like that is taken over by another company as big, that somehow you gain efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
At some level, you almost max out on efficiency. So all you end up doing is laying people off. And now they're out in the system competing with other people, and rates go down. And now this morning on the way in, somebody just came up with a study saying that yet we have less small business growth than we've had in ages because the interest rates are so low that other companies that they can avail themselves of that interest rate are buying other companies.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, if you and I want to start a company, we don't come anywhere close to getting that interest rate. So it actually is working against small business in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, but in the political climate, the thing of it is, as long as you keep scrunching the amount of companies there, the amount of stocks get less. So your supply of stocks goes down, so the price goes up. And you've got, you know, and you've got companies buying their own stock back. If you go back 10 years, there's some studies I've read. I probably have some here somewhere buried in my files, for lack of a better term. I mean, that, you know, a significant chunk of all the money that's entered the market in the last 10 years has been companies buying their own stock back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you've got all these kind of discontinuities. You can't trade on that, right? I mean, you can't, you know, you can't just sit there, and say, well, gee, you know, I should go short everything because of that. You know, you can't do that. You can't trade on it. But you have to be very, very concerned. I mean, right now, it looks to me like the asset values are coming unglued, that no more money that the Fed puts in there is going to do any good. I think we've reached that point. You know, for the Germans to go minus 0.8% versus minus 0.5, I don't know what that does. You know, that's 50 more cases of beer into a party when everybody's already passed out. I don't know what that does. And you know what? And there's not a piece of literature that could tell me that it does something good. Because I don't think anybody has an example in the history of the world. I guess if you want to go back to the Weimar Republic, where they used to let people leave in the morning to go shopping because the prices go up by the afternoon, can you imagine what the nominal growth rate of the economy was? It didn't do anybody good, did it?
Nope.
So you've got that pushing the market down, but then you've got this Chinese situation and the tweet situation where everybody's afraid to go short because there's still this feeling that Xi and Trump can meet in a battleship on the ocean and come back and say everything's all fixed now and we'll run up 10%. So nobody wants to get caught. You know, I mean, the market's going down here the last few weeks, and I'm okay because I've got puts for people, but if I wasn't concerned about the upside, I got my calls way out of the money. You know, because I don't want to get caught on the calls to the upside. Well, I would never do that in a normal world. Why the hell do I have to put calls 4% out of the money with 2 weeks to go?
Mm-hmm.
Yet, I don't want to get caught on the upside. If the market goes up 10%, I don't want my guys to make two. You know, if I can possibly avoid it. So even I am into this, caught by this trap that, you know, you'd be careful because the surprise is probably going to be to the upside. Yet, right now, the market looks pretty awful. And you look at these valuations, I don't think that the investing public that has been investing anywhere in the 10-year or less range has any idea how to price stocks in a normal interest rate environment. Because they never had to. I mean, what do you mean? The interest rates are 2%. If a stock pays a 3% dividend, it's worth $90 billion. And, you know, there's no competition. Where there's none, you can't get a T-bill for anything less. Well, you get a one-month T-bill for 2% or 2 months. After that, it goes down. I mean, whoever heard of a smiley-faced yield curve, Brendan? I don't think I've ever seen that. Where the five-year rate is lower than the 30-year and it's lower than the 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, that is remarkable to me, how the interest rates are looking right now.
But what do you think? I mean, You hang away from the TV, thank God, and you know you're not talking to clients and people all day long. That this is the topic of discussion. I mean, when people settle down someplace over a cup of coffee or dinner or whatever, what do they make of this?
It's confusing. I mean, and the fact that their market swings for the market is up by tremendous amounts. You know, on a Thursday or a Friday, and then it comes back on Monday or Tuesday, and it gains back everything. It just seems much more inconsistent, much more volatile than it has been in the past. And there doesn't seem to be much rhyme or reason. It seems like if something negative impacts the market, then it's almost a new normal that we can rationalize, and it'll be okay. So the market starts going back up again, and then another economic bombshell goes off, and it seems like everything is in turmoil again, and then it becomes a new normal. And it doesn't seem like it really is a new normal.
Well, it's sort of interesting, to me anyway, that I even know you won a couple times. I've been on Joan Esposito's show as a financial guest, and I've had a couple of instances where people that have MBAs, and you know, one of them happens to be an attorney with an MBA and a real bright guy, you know, we're at breakfast and he kind of looks around like he was going to tell a racial joke, right? And he says, "All right, Chief, nobody's listening. What the hell are negative interest rates?" Because it's not intuitive for anybody to know that, even me.
No, it doesn't make sense to me either.
I mean, or Joan asked me, we've had nothing but questions, what does an inverted yield curve mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these terms that people are tossing around are so out there that the regular, why would anybody know that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you sit here all day long like I do,
mm-hmm.
and have some education in that area. But it's like asking questions about, you know, structural steel. I mean, you might as well bounce it off a rack, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, these are terms, and I get the feeling that the people, well, a lot of the people on TV and most of your reporters that wing them around, you can just tell if somebody uses
a
term.
They have no idea what it is.
They have no idea what they're talking about. And, matter of fact, I was in I was an expert witness in this, big trading loss case, right, a while back. So they bring this lady in who's the risk manager of some big firm. I mean, real big firm. I'm not going to tell you what the firm was. And and she's talking about volatility and how the market was very volatile and blah, blah, blah. And so the lawyer says to her, how volatile? Well, it was very volatile. He goes, give me a for instance. What's normal? How do you measure it? And how much more volatile was this than normal? Well, what do you mean? He goes, first of all, why don't you define volatility?
Mm-hmm.
She goes, well, you know, volatility. He goes, no, you can't define the word with the word. What is it? She had no idea. She couldn't, and she'd been in a business for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And using the term every day, well, what is it? And I think a lot of our politicians, especially our president, are banking on that. They wing these terms around, and we had, Navarro on Friday night, and I'm sitting there, I was cringing. If I would have had a gun, I might have pulled an Elvis and shot the TV. You know, I mean, the man is one liar after another,
mm-hmm.
in terms of when you don't give people a whole story. I think it's more insidious than a flat out lie. As I've aged, I'm convinced that that's the case.
Well, yeah, and when you tell part of the story,
yeah.
you're only telling part of the story for a reason.
And he was all over Jay Powell regarding there's never been a bigger spread between our interest rates and other people's. He never once said, of course, the other people's are negative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, if ours were 8 and everybody else's were 4, he might have a story, right? Mm-hmm. But if ours being 2 and the other people's like -1, that's not a story. I mean, mm-hmm. unless you say, well, wait a minute, 2 is actually pretty low. I mean, right? Historically pretty darn low. But it's not like interest rates are high now.
No, they're at what is almost their historic low ever.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like, but the entire interview is totally disingenuous,
mm-hmm.
because he's talking to people he knows don't understand or are willing to believe him because he's Trump's flunky.
But it's not disingenuous. It's designed to affect a purpose.
Right.
So it's not disingenuous. It's purposeful.
Well, I went to a little shindig Saturday night, and the Trump retweet regarding Clinton was the one who had the guy killed in jail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is already spinning in right wing land.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, none of that stuff spins in that area way faster than Democratic stuff. than the left stuff. The left, I don't think the left knows how to.
And especially when you're trying to convict the Clintons of something.
Yeah, and some jail murder and mm-hmm. yeah, and I, you know, you just, so I said to these guys, I go, you know, do you honestly think that we're talking about? I mean, the last thing I want to do is engage, you know, but do you actually think we're talking about rich perverts of an even more perverted range than, you know, having some fetish or something? We're talking about people that prey on young people. You know, not a husband and wife wanting to go to a sex club or something, which they get to do because they're, I mean, you know, we think, but what makes you think that those people are a denomination, that more of them are Democrats than are Republicans? I mean, do you really think that? Well, if I thought about it, probably not. Well, maybe you should think about it before you say something. I mean, does it surprise me that Bill Clinton was this guy's money? Anybody with money was Bill Clinton's friend. Anybody with money is every politician's friend.
That's right. Why, and a guy like Epstein is going to collect rich politicians right. for his as his friends.
And who do you think who's the man behind the curtain that told Acosta to back off? You think it was a CIA director?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if he was doing it because somebody told him to, or because he was
claims
trying
somebody
to
told him
favor.
To. He claims that they were that the people he was going after were somebody said they were assets, so he shouldn't go after them.
I didn't see that story, so I don't know.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't have any idea who it was that to speculate would just be to feed into this whole conspiracy theory.
Well, I mean, you may not be a conspiracy theorist, but anybody who doesn't look at the unevenness of how people are treated.
Oh, it's clear that he was treated differently than anybody else would have been in that situation.
Well, I mean, Gary Hart. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows, it was one time. Caught coming out of some lady's place.
Monkey business.
But then all of a sudden, George Bush, well, I'm not talking about anything before I'm 40. Okay, because you're a Bush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's whoever makes these calls, I mean, I'm always curious to who it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody backs off, and everybody else figures he must have been told to back off. They all back off. I mean, very strange. I mean, and this whole Chinese situation. I mean, I put out the, I lobbed out the chief manifesto about dealing with them. Can't buy over 49% of a company here.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put out a list of however many. I don't know what's sacred in this world. I'm not in the software industry. A list of 200 things you can't sell them or give them plans to. And oh, by the way, their people are not welcome in our grad schools here over a certain number. Okay. Let's do that. Why are we tariffing our own people?
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing?
We put tariffs on our own people because China's giving us the money for our treasury with the tariffs. And that's helping our economy.
According to who?
Our president.
Well, does anybody really
How many times has he said that China's paying us all the money for the tariffs?
And until people call him out on it, he'll keep saying it, and people keep believing him.
I know that. But why is nobody contrasting that?
They asked Navarro that on Friday night. Well, it's clear it's hurting their economy. They're doing worse. No, you're saying they're paying the tariffs. It's hurting their economy more. They're indirectly paying for them or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to lob out there because economically, the real answer is that every single good, every single product is different. And there probably are some products in which there's a tariff going on them that we are paying, but because they might be competitive, the Chinese actually have to drop the price enough to where they remain competitive, so the net to the person here is somewhat even. And then they are, in essence, cutting back on the price, which matches the tariff the people here are paying.
Well, that may be, but China's still not paying that tariff to the U.S. Treasury.
They're not paying. No, I'm very careful in how I'm explaining this. Mm-hmm. Which I'm the only one, by the way, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you know anybody else who? Now, but there's going to be another product. Now, I happen to know because I know people in the auto glass industry. As soon as the 10% tariff went on, even though I couldn't tell you what percentage comes from China, every supplier went up 10% the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Chinese guy is probably getting hurt in the sense that his prices are staying where they used to be, where other people actually now have a 10% raise in their price,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure is happening all over the place on those, because our guys can't wait to. Anything that the Chinese produce is probably not perfectly competitive in this country, right?
Right.
So I'm going off on a road here, but what I'm saying is think of two products. One is, kids' swimming pools, backyard blow-up swimming pools. From what I understand, they're not made anywhere else in the world but China. Because there was a story of some family about 5 years ago Brandon, who wanted to go through the whole year without buying anything from China. And mm-hmm. they made it to May, and they promised the kid a swimming pool, and they weren't made anywhere else in the world but China.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that's still the case or not, you know, I don't know. But
so a large part of the problem with the products is that the offshoring of United States manufacturing has been to China to give them a foot up in the manufacturing world.
Well,
which has ripples in our economy all the way through.
Plus, it is a communist country, which our companies love because you can pay off somebody in the government to make sure you never get a strike. It's like the mob.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you think if you went through Microsoft or any of these other people's books that you and look for instances of payoff, they wouldn't find them?
Of course, you find them.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder what we're doing here, but I'm saying depending on the product, if half of it's made in China, and half of it's made here. I mean, look at the steel companies here.
Mm-hmm.
There's tariffs on steel. Every one of their stocks are getting buried since it happened. Because the people in this country, the guys that are the most efficient manufacturers here, are now raising prices, or the guys that are raising prices are the inefficient ones. The other guys are burying them. So you look at Nucor is doing real well, even though their stock is still down, but it's not as down as much as U.S. Steel and Mittal. They're getting buried. AKS. I mean, I was actually looking to put some people in some steel stocks last week, and I'm like, God, it's this low. I mean, I said, let's wait a week. You know, I mean, who knows when you want to buy them or not? But they're so down. It looks like they're drowning, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the big help? I mean, every one of these things, I think you almost need to pick out 20 products, and you have to have somebody from the Department of Commerce doing a study of every single one and how is it being effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll bet we don't have people doing that. If we do, nobody's listening to them, because I'd be dying to know which items are up, which items are down. Which one the Chinese have had? I've had, there was one study by Morgan Stanley, it was maybe 3-4 months ago, and they came out and said that the prices have actually gone up a lot more, that the Chinese have been able to pass through way more of the tariff increase than Morgan Stanley's predictions had been. So they were under the prediction that if you put a 10% tariff on, China would eat 5% of it to remain competitive. And if the price went up 5%, and according to this study that they did, I don't know how rigorous it was, or how many people were on it, or how many products, they claim that the prices have gone up a lot higher than their original estimates.
Mm-hmm.
That China basically hasn't eaten much. But how do you know unless you pick, you know, 100 products and have somebody working 2 products apiece and following all the way through the system?
It's very hard to do that. I mean, you really can't keep track of all the products, but...
Well, you know, you got to get a sample and go, but do you think, you know, President Trump actually cares about what's going on there? He's got his story and he's sticking to it.
Well, again, going back to the stock market, that seems to be his marker. His marker for how good the economy is right now is premised on 2 statistics. One, the stock market right now, where the stock market is and relative to where it has been in the past, and especially since he came into office, and 2, unemployment. And if those 2 numbers stay similar to where they are now, he's happy and he thinks that the economy is doing great.
Well, when the market goes down for a week, though, now he's into, everybody knows what I'm doing is going to be in the long run, and in 2 years from now, if I'm elected again, it'll be double or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's his latest drivel.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for the long term type thing. I mean, you look at this unemployment rate. You know, if you really look at the numbers, Brendan, first of all, I've said this 100 times. The first economics class I ever walked into at Notre Dame, first thing the guy said is his unemployment rate number basically sucks. It doesn't do anybody any good because look, here's how it's calculated, and here we are. How many years later, and mm-hmm. we're still screwing around with this unemployment number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anyway, because if you look at what has happened in the last, matter of fact, I'll kick this up here. The number, this is the labor force statistics of the current population survey. How's that for a mouthful? If you look from July in 2019 versus, where do you want to look, 2012, we had 12 million people unemployed. Now we have 6. Back then we had 88 million people in this, we don't know what they are, column. Students, disabled, retired. There was 88 million people in there, and now we got 95. So what we did is we moved 7 million from one column to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So we got 95 million people now. We don't know what they do. Which is up, it's a lot. It's down, actually down a little bit the last couple months. But the unemployed number is people are, if you're looking for a job, you're unemployed. If you're not, you're stuck in this other column. Nobody looks at it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what kind of definition is that?
One that works for the moment.
Yeah, one that works, unless this number starts going up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's, but, and the, and I think that our statisticians have gotten so lazy that they, if you're not on the unemployment rolls, they consider you're not looking for work. So now the unemployment's back down to 6 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's going to be less people on it than when it was 12 months. So by definition, you've lowered your unemployment, not unemployed, because you're not counting them. What do you think is the story here in this jail thing? I mean, why'd they take the guy off suicide? No, he hung himself, right? Isn't that the idea?
Yeah, apparently he committed suicide with his bedsheet in his cell.
Now, is there allegedly, not having ever been in one, these isolated cells? Where do you hang the bed? There's nothing on the ceiling. It's not like there's a hook in there, just in case.
Well, I think there's a window. And the window either has some kind of handle or bars or something that you can tie it to. I mean, I don't know. I was trying to figure out how anybody commits suicide in a jail like that, even whether it's with a belt. Because where do you hang it from? I mean, the inside of the doors, I would presume, would be flat. It's not like they've got bars on the door that you could hang, you know, tie something and just throw yourself down. I've been trying to figure out how that's done, but I haven't seen the inside of these jail cells.
Well, maybe
either,
they should just give.
Know.
Maybe I should just put a hook in every jail cell with a noose in case anybody
wants
to do it.
Well, actually, you know, that's an interesting point, because if you have gone into bathrooms in public buildings, I'm talking about like in the lobby areas of hotels, you notice that there's no place now to hang your coat or your on the back of the door if you close the stall. They were removed. They were removed because of a fear of people committing suicide in their bathrooms.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. And this was a couple of years ago this started.
There's 300 million guns in the country. Why would anybody think? Maddie, did you ever think about, first of all, I'm too fat. I bet I'd pull that thing right out of the back of the door.
Yeah, but this started with kids in schools and others where they would go into a stall and they would, like sixth graders would commit suicide in bathroom stalls in schools or in buildings. And as a result, many buildings like hotels, restaurants would remove the hooks from the inside of the stall doors that you would normally use to put a coat on in bad weather. That you would hang your coat up there while you're doing your business. They removed those so that people could not commit suicide in their stall.
That's wild. I'm sitting here open mouthed on radio. Somebody who's willing to do that, I'm going to say that by the end of the week, they found another way to kill themselves. SP Futures down 350. You're right back, Mr. Joel Unconin.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Welcome up, big Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. This is Brendan Cronin. We have Joel O'Connor in a second. Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. We got S&P futures now down 475, Dow down 51, NASDAQ futures down 18. We're leaking a little bit. We're looking like we're going to, the Hong Kong airport is going to close again today. Now they're talking about they're working to resume normal operations, but I don't think they're normal yet. It's kind of crazed. DAX down 96.8%, FTSE down 29.4, CAC around on 22.4. We're in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 229, that's a full 1.1%. Hang Seng down 17.6. Shanghai down 17.6. Hang Seng down 543. It's 2.1. So that's obviously they're getting worried over there, and probably with good reason. We've got oil down 20 cents, 54.73. Brent down 13, 58.44. We've got gold up $20, 15.37. It came down a little bit yesterday, but now it's back up today. 6-year high on Hong Kong. We also have Argentina, which we haven't talked about. It's hard to go through a whole list of countries that have problems. We'll probably talk about Argentina a little bit tomorrow. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues at all coming in on the Edens or Kennedy right now. We had some earlier road construction on the express lanes. That's all been picked up, so the Kennedy is looking good. Same with the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Off to good starts there, as well as the Southside expressways. Off the expressways, we have a crash on Southwest Highway at Harlem out in the southwestern suburbs, and that is a crash with injuries. Crews are on the scene there. An investigation is continuing. And then there's a structure fire at Ogden and Joliet Avenue, U.S. 34, that happened overnight, and the crews are still on the scene there. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, some clouds and some sprinkles early, and then the clouds will burn off, and we'll have a very pleasant, partly cloudy day today with a high of 78. So looking forward to that. Right now it's overcast and 73 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine, hot with a high of 109. Right now it's clear and 81. In sports, Sox and Astros were rained out last night. They'll play a doubleheader today, 3:40 first pitch for game one, and then the game two will start about 30 minutes after game one concludes. Dylan Cease versus Zach Greinke in the afternoon game. So if you can get out of work, that's a good one to go watch down on the south side. Cubs are off last night. They'll begin a three-game set in Philadelphia tonight against the Phillies. Diamondbacks took care of the Rockies last night, 8-6. Chief.
All right, Matty, what they used to call those when they were actually scheduled?
Doubleheaders.
Twilight night. Twilight night doubleheader.
Yeah, so. A 3:40 first pitch. Twilight.
Sox used to schedule. What do you think? 2, 3, or 4 a year of those.
Yeah,
they were big.
Well, most teams had a couple of regular doubleheaders and twilights.
Well, the Cubs always just had them on Sunday, obviously because they didn't have any lights.
Mm-hmm.
Joel, what other than their Argentinian peso being down 15% in one day? that's kind of a lot. What's going on down there? The one guy, the market friendly guy, got crushed in the primary, and the thing's been spiraling downhill for like a week now.
Yeah, isn't there a phrase about, oh, my Argentina, or something like that? Isn't there? Or am I too old to read?
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
Yeah, don't cry for me, Argentina.
Yeah, well, if you're long, Argentina, you're crying. Yeah, yep. there was an upset in the election there, and, you know, I mean, they're already, like, major league in debt, and, you know, this guy says he doesn't want to default on the debt, but, it's just another problem in another, you know, economy, another nation. So what you have to do if you have to sell Argentina and buy the TLT. I mean, you know, rates are going to zero, below zero. It's just a situation that's not good. They hit the market yesterday. It looks like we got a little pressure on the market from again today. The actual fundamentals, all I know is that Argentinian ETF, ARGT, looks horrible, and it doesn't look like it's going back anytime soon.
What, Joel, we've been on the air together for a while on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
You and I have talked like a couple of old farts maybe about this. You can't solve debt problems with more debt. and yet it looks like everybody got away with it for damn near a decade, and now all of a sudden it's like popping out like a whack-a-mole everywhere.
Oh boy, I'll tell you, you know, just overall too, you know, the overall market action, last week to have, you know, the meltdown earlier in the week and then, you know, came all the way back. We were actually positive at the end of last week. I thought that was a gift. I mean, I really try and, you know, look at the market long terms, bullish perspectives. I was thinking, after all this happened, you came back, you're going to give me, you know, flat or up on the week. So, we found an area in the market of resistance, I think, you know, let's just call it 3,000, a little bit above in the S&Ps, that I just can't see us busting through that before the election. Maybe go down and test the lower end of the trading range, but there's a lot of nervous Nellies out there.
Well, I mean, everywhere you look that has any sort of issues regarding debt, I mean, I was looking at, there's something like $12 trillion around the world in dollar-denominated debt. These are investments people here have made in other people's businesses or whatever it is. And in other words, they're dollars loaned directly to, quote, China. And China's got three trillion of, as Audrey would say, 3 trillion of the 12 trillion is Chinese. And now the amount up until a few years ago, virtually all of that was performing, and now we're starting to get some, and it's not performing. And when you lower the currency, and the interesting part, you just mentioned the fiasco last Tuesday, when we were down almost 800 points based on the yuan being devalued. By my calculation here, and you're more on this than me, the yuan is now lower than it was last Tuesday, right?
Right, nothing has really changed, fundamentally in the last week or so, but, you know, the market was resilient and, returned it. I just, you know, these problems that we talk about, things have been going on for a long time, and just somehow the market seems to set them aside and move higher. At this time, it just feels a little bit different, with the volatility. The gold market's telling you that there's, you know, problems on the horizon. A lot of the companies that did have good earnings had pops. Those earnings have faded. And, you know, once again, I mean, you know, for investors out there, you know, 3%, 4%, 5%, 6% is a return that, you know, I look for. And it's hard in this market when you see these stocks make these big moves and stuff, but I don't know. AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, I don't think they're going out of business yet. I mean, I think there's definitely a place for safe havens, and you're seeing that in the market right now. I think it's definitely risk off here until we either get a trade deal or to the election. That's a long time for me to look out to November 2020. That's a long-term perspective.
But it's also real tough for a, I'm guessing from what you just said, you like to be somewhat of a value investor. And there, I agree with you, but if you look, I mean, I have my screens arranged, you know, I've got the Dow Industrials, I got the Dow Transports, I got a lot of the, I got all of them in columns, so I can kind of look at them. Yesterday, with the possible exception of Johnson & Johnson rearing its ugly head under, you know, up like 4 cents once in a while, the entire Dow Industrials 30 and the 20 transportation average, they're all down all day. So when you get a day like that, you can say, well, I really like Verizon, or, you know, like nobody's phone bill's going down or something like that, which is, by the way, very true. But in a day like yesterday, if you and I are doing somebody's, basket desk, and the futures go flying down 10 points, and somebody calls us up and say, you know, sell me $30 million worth of the basket, you don't pull Verizon out of that stack and say, this is a good one, I'm not gonna sell this one. I mean, you don't do that. So, you know, you're, no matter what stock you have that you think is a winner or a loser on an up day, you're caught in the flood that day. Now, I guess you could say that, you know, Verizon should be down a buck and a half, and it's only down 40 cents, you know. So, and it reflects the fact that in the midst of the carnage, there's somebody chipping away at Verizon, you know, or whatever stock you're talking about. I mean, I guess that could happen, Joel, but it sure doesn't seem like it. All you see is a sea of red.
No, and, you know, you're right. You know, a lot of times when, you know, they take the market out to the woodshed, they really don't spare anything. And, you know, those stocks have held up extremely well. But if you look over at the course of time, you know, utilities, those are, you know, those kind of stocks have been, you know, where you have gotten some capital appreciation. But you're right. I mean, we're in extraordinary times here. I think from a longer term perspective, here you are hanging out near the all time highs with a lot of uncertainties here. So for me, I'm always looking for the volatility, you know, before we can really go back, have a meaningful rally. You got to, you know, get the volatility out of this. You got to have the market calm down a little bit. And then it just seems like if there's no tweets that, you know, the market seems to migrate higher. But China debt, Argentinian situation, I mean, it doesn't look like with those, you know, one of the opportunities where you just on the decline, you back off the truck. I think you see a lot of choppy range bound trading for quite some time.
All right, Joel, talk to you next week, buddy. Maybe the right. Things will be better.
S&P futures
down 7, down on 68. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right now.
Money. Get away.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Brennan Cornan, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures now down 750. NASDAQ Futures down 26. We were up last night. We were kind of flat when we came in, but we're leaking. Do we have Mr. Kenny?
How are you, sir?
How are you, man?
How are you?
All right. Did you get my email?
No. When did you send it to me?
Oh, you know what? I might have sent it to your old address.
Oh. I'll have to go look for it because I don't see it yet.
Well, that's all right. I'll get the new one from Maddie, but I watched you on TV yesterday. That was could be the Gesture Hall of Fame show. Somebody came in and they thought
I'm on again on Friday morning. I'll be live from the New York Stock Exchange because we'll be up in New York for an event on Friday morning. I'm hosting 15 people on the floor of the exchange in the morning, and I'll do my I'll do the show from the squawk on the street from there at 9:15 in
good
the morning.
You,
and
you
again at 1 in the afternoon with Kelly Evans.
You were terrific. You're not quite as controversial on TV as you are with us.
Well, we talk about different subjects than we do on TV. You know what I mean?
Yes, we get into the dirty part a little bit more. So did the Polcari sheet manufacturing company get those sheets into the jail?
No, can you believe that? We can sit here and talk about that whole thing the whole day, but you know, there's a lot of explaining. There's going to be a lot of heads to roll. The fact that De Blasio hasn't even come out to say anything about what happened there is another thing that we should be asking. You know, where is he in terms of quote unquote leadership? There's going to be a lot. There's going to be a lot that comes out about that.
Well, those aren't his guys.
There's a right to be, you know, incensed.
Those aren't his guys, though, are they?
Say it again.
Those aren't his guys. It's a federal prison, right?
Yeah, I hear you, but there it is in Manhattan, right? It's at the MCC. The thing is under his scrutiny. It might be federal, that's true, but you know, the fact that it's in New York City, and the fact that I think that falls under, I at some point it's going to fall under his purview, no?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how that works because obviously here, right down the block from here, where you and I had coffee that one day, is the Federal Correctional Center. You can see guys, you know, playing volleyball up on the roof there.
Yeah, no, nothing says that the MCC, which is, you know, the correctional facility there in Manhattan, Metropolitan Correctional Facility, is certainly a nice place to be, and I'm sure the working conditions there are horrendous. They're overworked, they're probably understaffed. I get all that, but, you know, considering who he was, Jeffrey Epstein, considering the talk around him, considering that a week prior they found him essentially in a state where it looked like he attempted to commit suicide, all that, you know, taken together doesn't really bode well for anybody to say, well, you know, the cameras suddenly didn't work. I mean, there's cameras everywhere in that facility, and suddenly the cameras in his wing weren't working, right? They get rid of his roommate and don't replace it with anybody. They stop looking at him. I mean, there's a lot to talk about there.
Well, Kenny, what we were talking yesterday, and I want to stick a little bit more to the finance with you, but just since you led us down this road a little bit, it seems like, I mean, who's doing the math? Who's running this country where you've got guys with 3-4 days in a row of overtime? Does anybody think that that's cheaper than hiring somebody else?
Well, I mean, you know, Here's the funny part about it. They say they can't afford it. There's no money in the budget. Yet, when the guys go get overtime, what do they get? Time and a half? Two times? What probably, are they getting in overtime?
If it's a weekend, they're probably getting double.
It's ridiculous, yes. When you see some of these guys, and it's a big thing in New York for sure, and I'm sure it's even in cities like Chicago and Boston and L.A., whatever. It's a big thing where these guys, as they come towards the end of their careers, they spend the last 2 years working overtime, and they get these massive increases to their income,
right.
Which then plays into what their pensions are, right? All of a sudden, the guy's made $300,000 for the last 2 years because he's got all this overtime, and then they're paying him $300,000 in a pension for the rest of his life. You know, it's ludicrous, but that's a whole other conversation.
Well, you look at a population like me, one of the sardines in the population. And every time you look at something, there's always some story where they can't do their job. There's not this for the budget. There's not that. You know, you don't see taxes going up. I mean, in a city here, people tell me that when you go to get a permit, there's no receptionist at the permit place. There's nobody. You can't even. I mean, and yet the price of permits is not down; it's up. I
mean, there's nothing in the budget. There's no room in the budget. Yet there's plenty of room in the budget for overtime. Right.
I don't. So what do you? I gave a little preamble earlier that the market from everywhere around the world looks to me like it's given up the ghost. Everything you and I have talked about for 5 years is sort of starting to happen, Argentina, wherever you name it, and yet everybody's afraid of an upside surprise if all of a sudden somebody declares victory someplace that you got to get out of the way for the couple of days.
Not sure you're going to get that upside surprise today or tomorrow. It doesn't feel like there's any surprise that's coming this week. The tone is certainly risk-off. The macro chaos that's happening around the world. You know, Hong Kong is going to be an issue because if Hong Kong goes on another 24 hours or 36 hours with this political unrest and the protesters and the shutting down of the airport and the disruption to travel, not only in that continent but really around the world, the Chinese government is not going to sit around and just wait. They've already started. You know, they've already started with the invade and crush, and the PLA is going to move in, and we're going to protect our rights, and, you know, they're using words like terrorism. I mean, that's all getting ready to move in. And, you know, on one level, I understand, but on the other level, there has to be a way out of this, and I'm not sure there's going to be a way out of it other than physical, if this doesn't somehow come under control. And then you talk about Argentina. Now there's a 75% chance of another Argentinian debt default. Cristina Fernandez is now coming back into power, and she's a corrupt official that everybody realizes, but yet she's now running on this ticket that swept the primaries yesterday. So that's causing political unrest down in Argentina and that part of the world. And so I don't think there's anything in the next 2 days next 2 or 3 days that's going to soothe the markets and all of a sudden cause the buyers to go rushing in. I think it's going to take a little bit of time. But listen, we're in August. It tends to be a volatile month. September tends to be a volatile month. A lot goes on. And so I think long-term investors need to be patient. I think their day is coming. They need to keep their powder dry. And even though the market's down and it looks like it's a huge buying opportunity, I think the S&P has to test the 200-day moving average, which is at 2790. So it's 100 points from here. I think it has to test it. It nearly tested it last week during the meltdown, and it bounced back in that rush to rally again. And now it's coming under pressure. And I think you have to test the technicals because the Dow broke it, the Dow Transports broke it, the Russell's certainly been below it, the Nasdaq and S&P have not tested the 200. And I think that has to happen.
Well, I think you're probably right on that. I just wonder, honestly, you and I have talked about it, and I will admit, I feel that for 10 years with interest rates artificially low, you've blown up asset prices. But I don't know how much, Kenny. I'm hoping it's 10% and not 40.
And with rates going lower, they're only going to continue to blow up asset prices. Because look, say what you want, but there is a floor under global equities with rates being near zero, negative in parts of the world, and, you know, all the rumor that they're going negative in this country. I don't think they're going to go negative in this country at all. Do I think they could certainly, you know, go lower? Yeah. But I don't think they go negative. But one way or the other, these low rates around the world are going to absolutely, look what housing is going to start to take off again, right? Already starting to do that in some parts of the country. Equity prices around the world are going to find some support. Certainly there'll be some pressure, but not the pressure that there should be if there's a real correction.
Well, there's,
and so I agree with you. What have we done? Is it 10%? Is it 15%? Have they boosted them by 40%? I hope not, but
yeah, I hope not too.
We don't know that yet.
No, and we talked earlier, I made the smart-ass comment that I guess if you looked at the Weimar Republic, you had huge growth between 10 o'clock and 12 o'clock because the price of everything went up. I mean, at some point, you're going to throw money at the place, and it's all you're doing. I mean, I think that's kind of what we're doing here.
Yeah, that's absolutely what we're doing. And look, Argentina, they talked about it yesterday. Inflation in Argentina, I think, was running at 56% as of yesterday.
And it's probably higher. If that's what they're counting, yeah, it's probably higher now. Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think they're just throwing money at it, and they're throwing money at it in this temper tantrum where the market is, you know, pulling the Fed around by its nose versus the Fed going, you know, you remember back in the 80s when Paul Volcker was there. There was none of this crap, right? He came out, he said, here's what we're doing. He turned around, he walked away. He didn't hold everybody's hand. He didn't give them a Xanax. He didn't tell them to take a Valium. He didn't say, lie down and let's talk about it. That's bullshit.
Well, that's right. This morning they were talking on the radio on the way in about how the advantage in companies just buying other companies, because the startup companies, there's less of them because they can't get loans at anywhere near the rate that the guy who's bigger and buys them, he can get the 3% loan and they can't. So they can't expand on their own, but somebody can buy them. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. Kenny, I'll look for you on Friday. What time are you in?
I'll be there at 9:15 and then again at 1 o'clock.
I will be watching, bud. I'll be grading you on the gestures. All right, buddy. Bye. Take care. S&P Futures down 650. S&P Futures down 21. Come back with Mr. Jeff Joseph.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. but have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howell. Sir Brennan Cornett every Tuesday. And we also have Mr. Jeff Joseph from Luckbox Magazine, editor-in-chief, owner, you name it. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. So I've got 3 1-percenters here with me. Matty Weber's got a Mercedes. He's a 1-percenter dude.
Yes.
Wannabe. All right, so let's say, for instance, and I hope this doesn't happen to any of you three guys, well-to-do fellas. Let's say, for instance, I were to break into your car, which I wouldn't normally do, but say I did and stole whatever you had in there, what number are you guys going to come up with the next day on the value of the stuff that's gone?
I know where you're going with this. I don't keep anything in my car, so my number is going to be very low. I think there's maybe a phone charger.
But this is not where you want to go if you're looking to be...
No, I know. I know where you're going with this, like I said.
I just have a bicycle pump in the backseat of my car.
Oh, well, yeah, I have my golf clubs.
And I have a case of Gatorade in the back. So.
You mean your custom-made Kenneth Smith golf clubs?
Well, yeah, I obviously have to up the value a little bit on those.
Jeff's awful quiet.
I'm quiet. I'm not a big fan of insurance reimbursement schemes or scams, so I would... I've been in accidents where I haven't filed claims, so I'm not likely to...
Well, say you were... Or, for instance, the world's most hated steroid geek on Earth now turned into the world's most loved man. And you go out to dinner in San Francisco after the ESPN game, and you find that your car was broken into. What's the number you put on with the stuff that was in there?
What was the number he did put on it?
Half a million.
What constituted half a million?
A camera, a laptop, miscellaneous jewelry, and a bag were reported stolen, worth in total around $500,000.
All right. Well, I'm hanging with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's, that is special. Miscellaneous jewelry.
That's probably the big ticket item.
But unless he was going to propose to somebody and had the big diamond rack in there, who's got $500,000 worth of jewelry hanging in their car if you're a guy?
Well, have you seen professional athletes with all the jewelry they wear, even when they're playing the games? Have you seen the necklaces on some of these pitchers when they're winding up to throw the ball and the chain is flying all over the place?
Well, high-end camera today is what, 2G? 3 maybe? Right? Well, you guys
how many lenses did he have?
Okay. A laptop, you know, a couple thousand maybe.
Maybe.
Unless he's got something weird on it. Miscellaneous jewelry in a bag. Now, what kind of bag are we talking about? A bag with a bat in it or what?
A bag with full of cash?
Maybe.
Yeah, when I used to have bags in the back of my car, it was filled with baseball bats, softball bats, and catcher's gloves and equipment.
Yeah. Smelly handball t-shirt you just wore and threw in the bag. You know.
Do you have an estimate on A-Rod's net worth? Because I'm looking at it here according to
I'm gonna say
Google.
It's pushing 150 more or more.
Up.
Yeah, up.
All right.
250.
More.
Wow.
I did find out from one of my sources that if you go to a party this place, all cell phones, all ways of taking pictures are all checked at the door by security.
Which I like that.
Yeah, I like that too.
By the way, according to Google, his net worth is $350.
Well,
all right. So,
well, now it's
what you're really talking about is that for most people in the car, that's like having $50 worth of stuff in their car.
But I mean, where does the guy lives in New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he does, yeah.
Okay, so if it's your car.
Either New York or Miami.
All right, so if it's your car and it's in New York and you're making deliveries and you're bringing presents to your girlfriend or whatever, some of which are jewelry, you might if you got that kind of money. But now we have to be talking a rental car.
It was a rental car. And how on a road trip covering the baseball game, like you said, in San Francisco that night. And they were just going to dinner, I assume, him and the production team or him and the other broadcasters, or maybe he has a friend out there, I don't know. It seems unlikely that he would have $500,000 worth of stuff in his car. But
yeah, how would you even get it out there?
This was a guy that might have a $100,000 watch.
That's right.
In his bag. That's what we're exactly talking about.
Right. Yeah.
What is a high-end diamond-studded... what's the high-end watch?
The Rolex? What are those? 100, 200,
a couple hundred. Yeah, a couple hundred.
Yep. We should be asking you that question, Chief. Isn't that a Rolex that you've got on your wrist right now?
You know what? I did get a... You know what I did to one of the guys on the board with me? Always had he was a big Mont Blanc pen collector, right? And he had all those. I don't know, do they even sell those anymore? They probably do.
They do.
So, of course, I was in New York. I went to Canal Street, and I bought about 8 of them. So I put like 8 of them in front of me and sat next to them at the board meeting. Where'd you get those things?
When I was in China, I bought a couple of Rolex that looked great for about $5 each.
Yeah. Well, the real good ones... You have to ask the guys on Canal Street. They went underneath the table. The ones on the top were lousy. They had a better brand of the knockoffs. They actually pretty much looked kind of like them.
Well, when you're buying knockoffs, you really do want the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're willing to spend $10.
All right, Jeff, the world is an economic world. Argentina, 15% cut in their peso yesterday. What are you guys writing about this week? I mean, is there a topic? How do you pick a topic when the topics are flying by this fast?
Well, I know we're going to do something about Nadal because he won the Madrid Open yesterday in a final against Medvedev. Oh, by the way, Nadal, his watch that he gets a lot of flack for wearing every tournament, it's a Richard Mille watch, I believe. And Matt, the value of that watch, it has to be at least $500,000that he wears every time he plays.
Well, there you go. That alone in your car is... the price.
Why would you, I mean, other than some sports where you actually have to sort of time yourself, why would you wear a watch when you're playing tennis or handball or racquetball?
You got it for free. He's a great sponsor.
According to Forbes, Nadal's latest version of the watch he wears is valued at $725,000.
There you go.
How many diamonds are in it?
No diamonds.
Good God.
It's all about the movement, and it's he wears it every tournament.
And that's actually a cheaper one than he's worn in the past. The one he wore in the 2015 French Open was $775.
There you go.
Really?
How many of those watches do you have?
Right, A-Rod has one of those in his car, and he's well over $500,000.
He's got the cheaper version.
That's right.
The nicest watch, with Dr. J and I, we went somewhere and we got, I don't know if we were anything else, we actually got, these were legit though, I think. We actually got the really nice Casios where, you know, they went down to 300 feet, like if you're drowning, you know how far down before you died type of thing. And they did the atmospheric pressure. But they were so darn big. I finally stopped wearing. I don't know where the darn thing is. But yeah. They're pretty neat. The big black rubber ones.
Sure.
You can see some of those ones that they use, like the Navy SEAL watches. Some of those are pretty cool. They'll give you your direction and all that kind of stuff. More serious on the question stuff here, but but the thing is, the news is so lousy. You got to get off it a little bit.
We're looking again at one of our favorite categories is the anti-competitive practices of Amazon, Facebook, and Google. It's something we've all talked about before. Mm-hmm. In fact, we did reach out to I reached out to Jonathan Tepper, who's the author of The Myth of Capitalism.
Yeah.
He's traveling right now, but I'd like to get him on the show.
Well, that'd be great.
And he's written and we did speak about that, and he's also going to participate in a roundtable that will be in the next issue as well. And we're looking at those very issues, you know, the everything from privacy and data abuses to anti-competitive practices, free speech issues related to, and Elizabeth Warren's proposal. We're looking at all those aspects of those three companies right now.
Jeff, do you know of anybody, and I'll ask you because you have people working on this kind of stuff, and I'll also ask Russell tomorrow, who's a professor, and is anybody doing any, there probably is, but do we know who anybody might be doing some, I'm going to say, very rigorous work regarding actually how this interest rate thing of the last 10 years has played out in terms of who's harmed, who's... I went in a weigh-in this morning. Maddie and I were just, when he hopped in the car, I was listening intently. They had... somebody came up with a study, and I don't know who the somebody was, I'm going to have to go back to BBM and find it, about how it's absolutely burying small businesses because they can't access money at that price, so they can't grow, and yet the people that are bigger are accessing it at ridiculously low prices, and they're buying out all the startups because they can access the capital markets at lower rates than the other guys can. I mean, it's not like when you and I were younger, where if you were a schlump, you paid 1.5 over prime, and if you were a really good guy, you paid a quarter over prime. It was like a 1% difference. It's not like that at all now. It's way more than 1%, and the guy who's on the low end can't even get it, even though the thing's high. And how it really is causing a lot of jobs to be lost. It's causing a lot of, just because of the impropriety of it, as it goes up and down the curve, it has not focused its way down. I mean, you heard of anybody doing any work? I'm not trying to predispose or, think what the conclusion's going to be, but I'm guessing that's what the conclusion would be. But I don't know if anybody's doing any work on it, do you?
No, I don't, but I'm not sure I completely buy into the premise, I think.
Really, you don't? Okay.
I think small businesses, that's lack of capital access is due to a variety of reasons, and some of it changing, banking's attitude and approach towards lending would certainly be one. And I think the private markets for venture capital formation and early-stage companies have made up the difference in a pretty robust manner over the last couple decades, or the last 6 or 7 years in particular.
But not to the... I think they have too. First of all,
if you're a startup company and you're worthy of capital, you're going to find it. That's my analysis of a space that I'm pretty familiar with.
How do you define worthy of capital? Because a lot of the startup corporations are looking for money to start up their corporation.
Well, everybody's looking for money. So, everybody, corporations, small startups, families. So, but being worthy of money is a separate thing. And quite frankly, I think that's one of the, when it comes to early stage capital, I think that's a great place where the market can decide. There's enough private investors who are attracted to the returns of venture capital, that kind of outsized returns. They like the absence of liquidity. They recognize that there's a liquidity or an illiquidity premium on venture capital and early stage investments. And that is, you're losing access to your money, but the upside is 6 to 10 years down the road, you might have an outsized outlier return, some sort of asymmetric return profile coming from an early stage investment, and that there's a lot of money that looks for those types of investments, particularly as pension plans and private capital and family office assets increase. They're always attracted to that. So if you have an early stage company that's worthy of raising capital, you're going to find it. In fact, I think one of the problems is they raise too much money. They spend more, they're like elected politicians. Yeah. The day they get into the office, they spend more time raising money for their next campaign than they do performing the job that they're supposed to be doing. So I don't think small business has access to capital issues that have not been offset by the private markets.
I think they have been offset a little bit, but I don't know how that could possibly be. Let me put it this way. I mean, I always zero in on it because we've had some people on the show that I was able to quiz that if you have the, I always use the example of the plumbing company with 5 trucks, where you need the sixth, and you need the $100,000 loan, and you've never missed it. Probably with the Dodd-Frank, you got to give a personal guarantee, or you got to put up your house. When you're way past that. I'm saying the growing company, yet somebody who has a bigger firm, maybe you're, some really big place, you could probably access stuff from, 3 or 4%. Where, I don't know that it's all that easy for people. I mean, maybe a little easier here in Illinois because we still have a lot of smaller banks. A lot of parts of the country don't have that.
It's true, but what's that's very true. That was a much bigger problem 4 or 5 years ago. But what's starting to emerge is these capitalist initiatives that kind of make up that difference. So there are lending companies now that we've talked about them briefly in the past that are really making up the difference. And the names don't occur to me right now, but there's a half a dozen.
Well, there's all kinds of them. Yeah,
you've heard them advertised, and for that company, for that plumbing company that's trying to get that sixth truck, 10 years ago, the local bank would provide it. 5 years ago, they wouldn't. And now, 3 years ago, there's there became factoring firms that would give at double-digit rates that aren't attractive, right. 14%, they'd factor their forward invoices. That's too much to spend for money. That should cost right. 3 or 4%.
Well, there was a time when people would do it on their credit cards because the credit cards were 10, now they're 25.
That's right. But yeah. what now exists are more and more companies. The same way that there's companies coming in to finance, to refinance the student loans, those companies are coming in to provide that access to capital gap.
Okay, so if you and I were, and we can bring Brendan with us, and we're sitting on the Federal Reserve, with all the advantages we give the banks, the FDIC, all those kinds of things, the fact that they're getting their ass kicked competitively by other people, I think is a problem.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah,
you think?
Yeah, and they're way
from their
primary purpose to encourage lending for economic growth. Yeah. Right.
And they don't, and the people from the exchanges will tell you that if you try and drop a half a billion dollars on them overnight, they don't want the money because they need more capital. It's considered fast money. So let's see. We got banks that won't take cash and won't loan. What are they doing? They're sucking money from people at negative interest rates, and they're giving the money to the Fed for interest. What business is that? I mean, we have somebody here at PTI that, not an employee, a few clients are in part of a group, and go nameless. People will pay 1% over the bank rate just to not... You have to put a personal guarantee on it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Now, why does somebody have to put? I mean, you know, you don't see the head of these big companies putting a personal guarantee on anything. Yeah. I mean, they've taken the corporate shell away from just about anybody smaller. And a lot of changes have taken place, and that aren't all that good. I just wonder if somebody somewhere, one of these universities, is plugging through a huge study as to how it's all filtered down. I guess, I mean, we might find. It's not as big a problem as I think it is, but I don't know. I'm not sure about that. And the credit card used to be people's. I knew people had built businesses on credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not going to do that at 25%. I mean, if you put low-interest credit cards, I just did this last week because we were talking to somebody on the air. No, I'm not so sure the way Google is now. I know you're always firing shots at Google. Do you think it actually searches for low-interest credit cards, or it puts the five big ones on there that are paying them?
I guess that's the biggest problem with Google. We really don't know, do we?
But well, you see, Chief, with your point, though, about even putting things on credit cards at 20-25% interest, that still could be cheaper in the long term than going and giving up rights to half your company, giving up the power to a lender or a venture capitalist who wants to take a lot of your corporation. If you really believe in it and you think you can bear the pain for a couple of years till you start to turn a profit, then it makes sense to put it on your credit card, even at those exorbitant rates.
But we've seen, it's easy to forget, but we've seen whole industries, and I challenge anybody here, all of us combined, if we really thought about it, can we name 10 independent drugstores left? We probably could. I can name about 5. Can we name them? I bet we can't.
No, I can't think of any right now.
The only ones that I know are left are ones that have really zeroed in on the home hospice, rental stuff, those kinds of things. But other than that, the state not paying money for a year, the only person who can do business in the state is some big corporation that has access to money at 3 and 4%. Because mm-hmm. the state of Illinois doesn't pay it for a year. Okay. And yet, so the state's non-payment and the difference in interest rates that people pay has put virtually every small pharmacy out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even notice it. I mean, that's why I look at this stuff, Jeff, and I go back and say, wait a minute, what happened to all these people, like industries in our lifetime? And a lot of times there's a structural reason why they're all gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder if it's planned or if there's a big guy upstairs that said, we don't want any of these guys anymore.
Well, it's very interesting when you talk about that because, you know, it wasn't all that long ago when corporations of whatever business they were in wanted a contract from the state or wanted a contract from the city of Chicago or the federal government because it was a guaranteed revenue stream that they could count on a regular basis. And then as the states and the municipalities and the federal government got behind in their payment, it was almost a death knell to have a contract if a significant portion of your business and your revenue was dependent upon payments from the state. You were going to go out of business in a couple of years because you couldn't hang on with the delay in payment.
Well, you would think if things were competitive, and I know you guys are free market dudes, if things were competitive, if it's the Jeff, Brendan, and Chief Pharmacy, and virtually all of our money is owed to us by the state of Illinois, and they're good pay. In a perfect world, our ability to factor those receivables should almost be the same as CVS's and Walgreens.
Yes, sure.
And yet, I don't think it is. I honestly don't think it's close. And that, my question to you guys, if I'm right, why is the system, why is a competitive system seeming to me continually falling apart, screwing up? I mean, the numbers should be the same. But if CVS is borrowing money because every state in the country owes them, we should be able to get the same loan pretty close because it's the same person we owed the money from.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I'm not so sure. Do you think I'm right here that it probably isn't?
Too big to fail.
Well,
when you're selling, you know, I mean, just think about it. If you owe a consortium of banks, if you owe them $100,000, they're more likely to close you down than if you owe them $100 million.
Oh, sure. I would agree with that.
And if you're trying to factor your factoring quotient. When the chances are that when you're talking about a national organization like a Walgreens or a CVS, that somebody's someplace, either California or Texas or Illinois, or somebody's going to pay first to start the ball rolling. And at a certain point, their accounts are so aged that they will start getting payments. Whereas the smaller pharmacies, in your example, can't hold on to start getting payments from 3 or 4 years ago that are being carried forward. But I mean, once that spigot opens, yeah, you may be 3 or 4 years behind, but that spigot opens and you will start getting some payments. The smaller corporations, the smaller pharmacists cannot hold on to that point where that spigot opens up. The larger ones can. And so the factoring element comes into play as what the expectations are.
All right. Well, that would make some sense. Jeff, you got anybody that it does the international stuff for you guys? I mean, is it somebody? I have no. I this Argentina thing jumped up on me. I wasn't paying that much attention. Is it? You got guys that keep their eye on stuff like that?
Not on a full time basis. On a more of a one off project basis. But yeah,
it's kind of hard to keep track of all the brush fire country. I mean, last week in the midst of all the carnage, we didn't even get a chance to talk about it, Maddie. There aren't like a couple of Italian banks blowing up too. I thought it was part of the it was like the fifth news down as you were reading all the rest of the stuff last week. With the obviously China was at the top of the list with the wine and everything,
right.
But in the bottom line, it was like, oh yeah, and by the way, a couple of Italian banks are getting clobbered. I mean, it is very difficult to keep track here. I mean, there's no question. What do you?
Your European banks got crushed last week. You know, they lost 8.5%, and that's a big number to see a decline. So on a And, you know, the global yields, bond yields being at lows right now, you know, these are big red flags, that's for certain. But, yes, the not just emerging markets, but European banks in general really took a tough month.
What do you think?
Basically, you know, they're looking to a prolonged trade war. I mean, that's what they're projecting at this point.
Well, in fact,
everybody seems to be except the S&P right now, which is still...
Well, it's hanging in there.
It's hanging in there.
Yeah. What do you think the chances of it not? I mean, are we gonna fall if we fall apart in the market here? I'm almost getting the sense that things are coming a tad unglued, and I sure hope I'm wrong.
Well, there's enough reason for things to become unglued. You know, there's enough reasons for that. But you know, I'd go back to something I mentioned a couple weeks ago that for whatever reasons that you want to speculate, the market continues to like Trump. That can be the only thing that represents an underpinning. Now I think the conventional wisdom would probably be that the trade war was going to resolve itself before the election, and that some of this was window dressing and that was being sandbagged for, you know, a good news prior to the election. I think now that seems less likely, particularly if you look and see what happened last time we approached the midterms, where there were outstanding trade issues, and then China said, well, let's pass and let's get through the next election cycle. And I think as we get closer to the general, they're likely to do that again, and that's putting much more pressure on the administration. Right now, I think the market still favors the Trump administration over any alternative it sees on the horizon, and I can't think of any other underpinning for the market right now, considering that where yields are. You know, when you look at all the red flags out there and you see risk assets going up, I mean, it's definitely a risk-on environment, but the only market that hasn't seemed to got the message is the S&P, and the only intangible I can point to is that the market continues to like Trump.
Well, I think, in my opinion, and I've been selling, like, the calls I sell for people, I sell pretty far out of the money, because I think he has the ability at any time to say, you know what, we're not going to go to 25%, we're going to stick with 10, or we're going to, for at least another year. Of course, he'll turn that around in a day. If he said that today, we'd rally. I mean, he has the 1 or 2 day ability to cause a 3 or 4% up move, I think, pretty easily. You have to be aware of that. If you're right. So you really don't want to, I use the term, truncate your upside. You know, I mean, you might want to protect the downside, but it's hard to sell calls here because you sit there and go, okay, well, I got $2 for the call and now the stock's up $20. What did I just do to myself? I mean, it is unusual, but I just, the amount of, what you see these little fly, you know, you look at the debt loads everywhere and you see the desperation of all the other candidates. And plus, you mentioned that the market continues to favor Mark. If you were to get on the street with a tape recorder, you interview anybody, everybody in the world will tell you that the market likes Republicans. Yet, if you go back to 150 years, the market's actually done better under Democrats.
I'm not making that claim. I'm just saying the current market seems to favor Trump to an alternative.
But you have guys like Carl Denninger, if you listened yesterday, talks about essentially a government plot to favor corporations over the working people in terms of pay scale, in terms of everything. Mm-hmm. Obviously we are favoring the managerial class, I think, in a lot of ways. And it's the point now where you're not even an investor. Do you think the investors at Commonwealth Edison or the people who run Commonwealth Edison give a rat's behind about their investors? I mean, you know, it's interesting who's kind of running the show. I guess we'll find out when we find out who killed this guy.
It certainly can't be himself.
No, it probably won't be himself. SP Futures, unless somebody came in with the sheet already tied in a noose and say, if I were you, I'd attach it right there. SP Futures down 9 now. NASDAQ Futures down 31. Be right back. Stocks for Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howard. It's Mr. Brendan Cornett, Mr. Jeff Joseph, Mr. Matt Weber. A full house of interesting personalities here this morning, shall we say. Brendan's now talking about how you're hitting a baseball and there's noisy versus hitting a golf ball and it's quiet. I'm not so sure where that came up from, but it was an interesting debate. Nasdaq futures down 31.
We're talking about athletes.
We're talking about athletes.
And their watches in tournaments.
Yeah, well, you've got Jeff absolutely mystified about this Nadal watch, Manny. It's how many ounces it is, and it's 750 grand. Dow futures down 57. Over in Europe, we've got sell-offs pretty much everywhere today. DAX down 127, 1.1%. FTSE down 53.7. CAC around down 36.7. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 229. It's 1.1%. Shanghai down 17.6. They're the only ones that are kind of hanging in there. Hang Seng down 543, 2.1% as the military, they haven't really entered Hong Kong yet. They're just building up as kind of a warning at this point. The airport's going to try and open today. Is that the story? But still crazy stuff going on over there. New oil market, we've got oil down 44 cents, Brent down 23, natural gas 212, RBOB 166, gold big mover today up 15, 16 bucks, was up 20 earlier. So 1534, obviously we've got Argentina. Their currency devalued 15% overnight. I'm going to bet, guys, I'll just make this bet. I don't know if anybody will take the other side. But some people in Argentina managed to get their money out yesterday into dollars. Now it comes back in there today. They're 15% richer than the guy next door. Just saying. I mean, it's really good to be in the know. To know the Fed announcement, to know the latest tweet. Manny, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. This sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine. The guide to money and probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. And Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Off to a pretty good start, although we do have a crash that just appeared on the Kennedy inbound before Harlem Avenue, and that's causing a bit of a backup as you're heading inbound on the Kennedy, so keep that in mind. No issues on the outbound side, normal traffic volumes building there. Edens and Eisenhower looking okay, same with the Stevenson, normal traffic volumes, no accidents to report. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Only other issue in the area is up North Shore, Route 60 at Route 41, Skokie Highway there. There is a crash causing delays. Weather today, clouds early, could have a shower or two, and then we'll be mostly sunny and very nice this afternoon with a high of 78 degrees. Right now it's overcast, humid, and 74 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 109 today. Right now it's clear and 82. In sports, White Sox were rained out last night. They'll play a doubleheader this afternoon beginning at 3:40 p.m. Cubs are off. They're at Philadelphia tonight taking on the Phillies beginning a three-game set. Diamondbacks top the Rockies 8-6. Chief.
The my conspiracy-driven mind, Jeff, is only because I've heard some of the wackiest things from people. We used to, when I say we, PTI did a lot of work in Mexico back in the early 90s when the peso contract was just getting going on the CME. And at one point, our clients from Mexico, we were 40% of the open interest. Now, it never was a, it wasn't the euro dollar, so it's nowhere near as big as it sounds. You know, I don't know how many contracts we had, but it never was a big success. You know, and we had some people that traded. So we would have people come up from Mexico, and in those days, there actually was a Board of Trade floor that people liked to go on and see, and there was a CBOE floor. So, I mean, if you brought people to the trading floors and had people from the exchanges talk to them and so forth from another country, it was a real big deal for all concerned. They came to a seminar kind of at the SIBO or something, and we never made any money. We got some clients, but we never charged anybody to be here. And, so I was talking about the last time with these guys at dinner that they, how much, you know, the peso had just been devalued. I said, well, that's kind of really a shame. I mean, well, if you're, anybody who is anybody in Mexico, like, keeps their money overseas in dollars every night. So if it gets devalued, it just makes you 10% richer than your neighbor the next morning. So at the time, I don't know how much cash you could take on a plane with you. I don't know if they search you, what they do. But say you had 10 grand and you walked into a Mexican bank. Yeah. The banks were in deep trouble because everybody would take their money out of the bank and move it to like Bermuda and put it in dollars overnight. So if you actually went into a Mexican bank and just gave them 10 grand in cash, they'd give you a credit card and they're paying you like 12% interest. They were dying to have your dough because everybody else was moving it offshore just in case it got. I'll bet there's all kinds of people in Argentina for the last year every night their money's offshore.
Yeah.
Because they know the thing is a mess, even though they're probably telling their population everything's fine.
Well, you can make the case that as Bitcoin begins to proliferate, that type of arbitrage might begin to slowly disappear.
Well, I think it'll... I honestly believe there will be, if the governments keep doing what they're doing, there will be some sort of an alternative currency. I don't think it'll be something that goes up and down like a Bitcoin. I honestly believe, you guys throw a shot at this, it'll be, on a smaller scale, it'll be somebody like PayPal, where it'll become sort of a barter system where PayPal keeps track. So people that do international trade, you know, through PayPal, you know, I sell stuff on there, I can buy stuff on there, and my account at PayPal is PayPal dollars or something. Sort of like the dollars that aren't the real silver dollars at the casinos now. And they used to be, 25 years ago, you went to a casino and played the dollar slot, you actually got dollars. They were actually U.S. dollars. They haven't been like that in a long time. They kind of look like them.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't spend them anywhere else, but they're a dollar in a casino. So, do you think that I'm all wet on this? The idea of having the currency that goes up and down 10%, the whole idea of a currency is it's supposed to be stable, and Bitcoin isn't. Because Bitcoin is combined with this currency.
Yeah, you know, I've been skeptical on Bitcoin, not cryptocurrencies in general, and certainly not certainly not the blockchain, but I've been skeptical on Bitcoin. But you have to take a look at this recent price action and the manner in which it's beginning to converge with non-traditional alternative assets like gold and silver. It is starting to trade. It is clearly the recipient of more institutional money as of late. Goldman Sachs came out yesterday, said they're looking at 14,000 now, and to see it trading in sync with gold is pretty interesting, that it's achieving some sort of adoption among institutional investors as being a alternative currency hedge. I think the last couple weeks are really worth taking note of.
I would agree.
Even as a skeptic, I think a bigger note for the old school traders is that this gold silver ratio, this silver has to look really attractive right here now, not getting a lot of attention because
we were I was discussing that last night with actually a couple of clients. Now the question comes down, and actually I was Well, you're pretty clairvoyant. I was going to bring that up my next topic. Gold, obviously, is a precious metal. Silver, half-assed.
Right.
It's somewhat of industrial metal, less now that you don't need it for film.
Right.
But it's half industrial, half precious. Now, if the economies of the world go down, is it ever going to... Could it trail gold for a decade?
Well, that's the question.
Yeah.
You know, they've traded in sync, but there's a wide divergence right now, and that ratio is more attractive than it's been in a long time.
You know,
long
you're about the fifth person who said that.
Yeah.
Gold at 1533, traditionally, where should silver be? I mean, it's at 17. Should it be 18 or should it be 25? I mean, I don't.
You know, there is the factor. I forget what it is offhand, but somebody out there knows the simple answer to that question as to what the ratio should be.
Because right now it's like it's like 1.2% per ounce.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it should be what, 2% probably or something? I mean,
I can't guess on the ratio. Yeah. I was just looking at it, but I can't.
I mean, it's hard for me to.
It, right.
I mean, I've gotten the feelings I have people in both, right? Mm-hmm. But that silver has been dragging. I just don't know how much. I mean, and how much of it is... I mean, for instance, if you look at the three that I'm looking at right now, you've got silver, which is half industrial, half precious. You've got gold, which is obviously precious and more of a... Then you got copper, which is, I'm going to say, is 99%
right.
industrial.
Right.
Well, copper is flat on its ass. It's 257, and a lot of people look at copper as a harbinger of how the Chinese economy is doing. And when it gets to three... People think China economy must be getting better.
Yeah.
Well, 257 means they're going down a rat hole. If you're a guy who focuses, so if you look at the 100% industrial versus 100% whatever and silver in the middle, I guess I'm tempted to put some people in silver this week. To be honest with you, because you're the fifth smart person that told me that, but I just don't know. I mean, do I expect it to be 20 in a week? Yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, I think the pairs trade is what's probably the most attractive, you know, lower return, but more, you know, higher probability is that buying silver and shorting gold, you know, is the more attractive.
Well, the next question, right, it's somewhere in here. Do you want to get on this copper?
Well, you know, copper is a little distinct in some ways because, as you said, I like how you segregated those three kind of verticals, one being, you know, the currency hedge, one being industrial and that hedge, and the third being industrial. But copper is also often considered a harbinger for commodity prices in general, you know. So, you know, it has much, much tighter ties to the economy. So if you're looking at bond yields right now, which are signaling global recession, I think copper is a little, you know, I think it's hard to be long copper right now.
Well, the company that, well, back when you were on the floor, I'm going to say that the company that embodied copper was what? Freeport MacMahon.
Freeport
I used to trade
MacMahon.
That.
Yeah.
It was a brown badge stock, so yeah. I used to trade that when I first started. What did they do? They bought a gold mine, right?
Yeah, I do know they.
But I never could figure out.
Right?
Maybe you know. Are they 80% copper, 20% gold, or 90-10? I should have been able to research that, but I didn't. But their stock it's flat on its ass. It's in real bad shape because the stock seems to be following the copper more than the gold.
Yeah.
I mean, these are tough areas. I mean, but I would say right now, I'm not so sure I would chase gold here. You know, if you drop me $5 million today, I'm not so sure I'd run out and buy the gold miners. Because I had that thing, it was under 20, and now we're pushing 30. You know, so, I mean, how much more... I guess I'll ask you, both of you guys, how much more gas do you think gold's got? 1529.
That's geopolitical risk is the catalyst for gold movement, so I don't know.
I wouldn't know how to quantify that either.
Yeah.
I mean, I put it this way, I don't think it's as good a buy as it was at 1200. Right? I mean... But then again, we've seen in the last several years, we've seen kind of just the opposite, because that's my trader mentality.
Sure.
I mean, I'll pick a stock that nobody even trades about, Eastman Kodak. right? At $35, I might want to buy it. At $40, I might want to sell it. And at $37, I don't care, right? That's how traders think. I mean, remember when you used to do that? That's how traders think. You're probably not going to buy it at $35 and still have it when it's $60. Because you're going to say, well, what's it doing up here? I would never buy it here. I'm going to sell it, right?
Right.
But somehow we've got markets that now, once something catches fire and gold starts to go up, you got a million people that are buying it because it's going up. They don't even know what it is.
That's right.
I mean, traders are never going to catch that kind of a move. I mean, I never have. I've never bought a stock at like $5 like you guys can find with the magazine, some new company, and 5 years later, the thing trading 400 and I still have it. I mean, I'd love to be able to do that, but that's not one of the guys that's sort of an interesting story. When the rally started in August of 82, one of the stocks, the stock where it started in, I don't know if you were around then, Jeff, was an Eastman Kodak. It's not even in the Dow anymore. And I don't know what the thing's trading, a couple of bucks. And it was so busy. So I see the guy in a bar later and I go, how'd you do it? He goes, I had a good day. He goes, I bought 100 calls right at the bottom. And I go, how'd you do on those? I made him an eighth. I made an eighth. I bought him at 2 1/8. Somebody came in and said quarter bid. I said sold. they ended the day at like 7 or something, which is a lot of. I mean, Pat, you were talking 1982. You know, $50,000 on one trade, like a real number. Yeah. when you're talking about the market would go up. If the market was up 18 points, it was a huge day.
Yeah. Well, you're making the distinction trader versus investor right now, and I'll ask you the question. My feeling is it's trader's market right now.
Yeah.
Volatility spiking, and there's all sorts of geopolitical. There's a lot of unknowns out there. Bond yields are low. People are buying equities for bond yields. S&P is yielding, what, 1.9?
Yeah.
And we're 1.65 on the 10-year?
Some people are doing 3%. You can find stocks that are paying 3
right.
or 4.
Right. Yeah. So this right now looks like a trader's market. And how many traders are out there? What is that, 3% of the investing population? 1% consider themselves an active investor? Everybody else is just, buying and holding indices?
Well, interrupt me if I get too long-winded on this, but seemingly all the time, In my years in the business, you probably, if you could, now you couldn't do it at PTI, and you probably don't want to do it even if somebody will let you. You don't want to be naked sellers of calls or puts, right? You can sell a put that's cash secured, but then it's not naked. But normally, if you started the week out and said, I'm going to buy, a 10 S&P or spider calls, 10 spider puts, I'm going to have something behind me, and I'm going to trade it all week. So when the market goes way down some night, I can buy something, and I'm covered. If it goes way up, I can sell something, and I'm covered. By and large, I would say that unless you get an unusual week, or unless you're, like, really good, you're probably not going to make up the time decay on the straddle you bought. I mean, clearly, we went how many years without a 1% move during the day? And I can't imagine that position every week.
Right.
You better have a lot of money because I don't think there was a week in 2 years you'd have made any dough. Now, I got to believe in the last 5 months, that position has to have been, in retrospect, a big winner. Because at night, you can just sit there and go, I'll buy the futures down like $40 and go to sleep. And you wake up in the morning and you're like, Phil. And it might actually be back to unchanged. And you're like, wow, holy bleep, Batman. But normally, you would never guess that. I think in the last two earnings cycles, if you'd have bought the straddles on every company, let's say the top 50 companies that had earnings, I think you might have been a net winner for the first time ever. And usually, if you could take all 50 of them, you probably would want to sell that straddle and not buy it. Because which is really hard to do, obviously, and first of all, like I said, at PTI, we wouldn't let you do it. But I mean, normally, the sellers make a hair more than the buyers because more people can buy than sell. So it's probably a little mispriced, just a little bit. Not a lot.
Well, that raises a question that I actually have for you. I'm long removed from asset management and account management from investors. It's something I did a couple decades ago, but I'm long removed from that. With all the, and I'm really curious about this because this is still one of your businesses, with the manner in which the investor has been trained over the years by the media and the discount brokers and the buy and hold and the indices and Vanguard and Boggle about, just buy and hold, buy and hold, buy and hold. I imagine there's significantly less appetite for any form of active risk management,
yes,
even when all indicators are out there, like right now,
right,
this market right now that says, hey, look, you need to be more active involved in your portfolio. It's just a prudent thing to do, first of all, because there's opportunity that you can actually enhance your returns. But do people, or do they just think they're being scammed by somebody who wants to generate commissions now?
Yes.
I really don't know what the attitude of the investors
is. Yes,
anymore.
I mean, the program that we run here, thank you for leading me into it, we've run a protected index program since 1998. We didn't even do it for 7 or 8 years because the put prices were so high and the calls so low, with the interest rates down to wherever they are. So, but now in the last 6-8 months, actually a year, people that knew us were calling up and they say, well, you're still doing that. We're always protected by puts. Now you've got that drag. Mm-hmm. And if you're selling calls and the market goes well, over a 10-year period, we were able to cover the put prices with the calls. Now, like I said, I'm having trouble doing that now because I'm leaving so much room on the upside. But you can sit down to people and they'll have, and these firms trap you. Like if you're at Merrill Lynch, you've got, your statement is an inch thick because you're with Big Cap Brendan, who puts you in 50 stocks. You got 42 shares of this and 57 of that. So you've got all this just to get out. And then you go there and they'll say, no, come on, don't you know that every time in the last 15 years there's been a market scare, if you just would have stayed away and not done anything, closed your eyes, not opened your statement for a few months, you always come back to record highs. Right. And that is an incredible thing to, and I've had lunches, dinners with people that have seen their 401ks or whatever, I can't do a 401k thing, but you roll into an IRA when you leave. And they'll say, well, they cannot pull the trigger because they're so involved in this. Hmm. And, you know, you being in the industry and me, the buy and hold theory depends on when you bought and when you held it to. Mm-hmm. I mean, from 1968 to 1981, the market went nowhere, right? The Dow crossed 1,000 the first time in, what, 69 or something, didn't go back through 83 or something?
Yeah.
I mean, there might have been a couple of blips in there. From 2008 to 1998, unchanged. You know, and now people are convinced. I've got some clients who I do a lot of work with, another firm that kind of subcontracts the protected program to me. Some of the clients in there, they're like, you know, the market's up 20%. The market's not up 20%. The QQQ is up 20% because the FANGs are up 20%, and it's narrower and narrower. Everybody picks the index that's up the most.
On a year-over-year basis, the market's up. The market's flat.
Yeah.
Right.
But you look at...
Yeah, I can't imagine a better year for trading.
No, but
because of volatility.
But what if you had... What if I had what I have, unfortunately... I got a bunch of people in the XLE. Mm-hmm. Talk about a dead dog. You know, what if you were long Schlumberger? The thing's down 50% in the last 2 years.
Right.
It's the third biggest oil company. You know, I mean, you could be, what if Brendan was your broker? I'll put his name in here instead of mine. what if you went to the guy or somebody came to me, and I have a nightmare about this once in a while, like 8 or 9 years ago, and said, here's my mother's portfolio. It looks pretty diversified. United Airlines, Kmart, Sears, Citigroup, Drexel Burnham, Bear Stearns,
Kodak.
United Airlines, Kodak. I mean, and you said, that looks pretty good. The person's got zero.
Right.
I mean, that's why there's a reason why I called my program the Protected Index Program. Because there's always going to be an S&P 500. Whether Luckbox Magazine and PTI are in there to make up 500.
Right.
There's going to be five. It's not going to go to zero where these other places did.
That's right.
Because, I mean, you look at the Dow. People say, look at what the Dow's doing. Yeah, but they're not the same. There's not an industrial left of the Dow. They can put new stuff in there. What if you took the Dow from 15 years ago and the stocks that were in there, GE and those other things? How you doing on that Dow? Well, what do you mean? You know, so it is amazing how people think they only deserve the... And you constantly get this. Then you get places like Schwab. Well, if you don't like your performance, you get your money back. Well, what do you mean your money back? Well, you get your commission back. Yeah, but they don't make money on commissions. They make money on kickbacks where they sell the order flow to. They're not going to give you that back, right? If you were to mention that on a Schwab commercial, they'd come after you with a gun. I mean, wait a minute. That's not how you make your money. You make money by selling the order flow to somebody, right? It's like Facebook doesn't make money by charging you. They sell your information to people.
Yep.
I mean, it's an odd word, but no, people are convinced that every time it goes down, it's just a buying opportunity. And how many people on TV today are going to say, we're down 4%, what an opportunity? I mean, where could Amazon be if all this stuff, you know, falls apart? We have some, even the bonds go even lower, or higher, the interest rates go even lower, and all of a sudden people find a way to tax them on a retail, on a sales tax. I mean, where could the thing be? 800? I mean,
or federal yeah. Taxes.
I mean, you have no idea where the stuff could go. That's why I'm not happy if I'm not protected. I mean, I just, especially some of the people who want to be the riskiest are the people that are like 75 years old and aren't working. Mm-hmm. And you say, I don't want that account. You have to say that. Mm-hmm. Because you can't, I mean, where do you, I guess if you're Merrill Lynch, you could put somebody in the bonds. I've gotten accounts from people where people are 80 years old and they put them in a 30-year bond. I'm thinking,
Jesus,
how healthy do you think this person is? I mean, right. What are we doing here? Yeah. All right, so you got 30 seconds. What about next month? When's the mag coming out, and what's the big push?
We're looking hard at the music industry again. We're looking at the companies we talked about. We're looking at specific trades during volatility spike periods like right now. So we're very focused on some of the issues we were talking about.
Is that right in that article? We got to get them on.
We will. There's a couple guys I'm trying to get on, and Luckbox is on Barnes & Noble and Books A Million nationwide right now on the stands. So.
All right, buddy. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Matty. Nice job. SP Futures, we're back to only being down 650. We were down 11. So we were having these five-point moves, just go back and forth. Talk about it all tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.